How do you learn? When do you learn? When do you find the time to learn? We know learning has got to be a priority. I'm not telling you something you don't already know. It's just we do get so busy. Too many other priorities, or we'll get to it when we can. Our guest today is encouraging us to foster learning moments in our work culture, taking negative or positive moments as they happen and intentionally learning from them right there and then. We can all make time for that, right? Hold on. Welcome back to Relationships at Work, the leadership mindset guide for creating a workplace we love. I'm your host, Russell Lolliker, a communications and leadership nerd with a couple of decades of experience in both of those areas and a whole heap of curiosity on how we can make the workplace a better place. If you have found yourself being a leader that's trying to understand and improve your impact on work culture and the employee experience, you're in the right place. If you're listening to this when it's released, or you might be listening to it later on, that's all good. But when I'm recording right now, I'm in preparation and going to be traveling to LA. I'm going to be at Podcast Movement Evolutions. If anything I've learned, and certainly something I'm trying to promote through the show, it's be curious. And I'm certainly curious about the world of podcasting, how I can be better, how I can get my message further out of my message, those of my guests. And we need to be curious to learn more from those around us. Conferences are really good for that sort of thing, especially when you take yourself completely out of the environment you're used to and putting yourself into a new environment. Leaders shouldn't have to know everything, but they should be curious about their environments. And that curiosity, well, that curiosity should really extend beyond our jobs, because leadership is about who we are, not what we do. If it was about what we do, then we're back to that whole checklist leadership thing that none of us enjoys or likes to work for. So off to California I go, where it's a wee bit warmer than it is currently in my home base on Vancouver Island. But I wanted to make sure I didn't just leave you without some amazing material to listen to. So I've pulled a great episode from our archives. This is a conversation with the brilliant Gary Ridge. If you didn't catch him the first time when we talked to him, I really hope you dig in and enjoy the nuggets that he's going to share with us today. He was just named the world's top 30 organizational culture professionals for 2024 by Global Gurus. He was number two. I'll get on that list 1 year, damn it. I'm not jealous. It just sounds like a great list to be on if Gary's on it. Anyway, let's get to the conversation. And on the show today, we have Gary Ridge. And here's why he is awesome. He served as the CEO and chairman of WD-40 for over 25 years. He's an adjunct professor at the University of San Diego, co-authored the book Helping People Win at Work, a business philosophy called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A, and the founder of The Learning Moment, his consultancy for culture coaching. And I'm not done yet. He was also named one of the world's top 30 organizational culture professionals in 2023 by Global Gurus. Hello, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Russell. How are you? Good to be with you.
I have to ask the question I ask all my guests, which I'm really curious about from your storied career. What is your best or worst employee experience you can share with us, Gary?
Well, let me call it the best or worst learning moment, because as you know, we don't make mistakes. We have learning moments. And one comes to mind that is very vivid, and it's because it enabled me to use one of our company values to be able to have a coaching interaction with someone. And here's the story. One of our values at WD-40 is and was, we exist to create positive, lasting memories in all of our relationships. And I was in a meeting one morning at our offices, and there was someone in that meeting that wasn't creating a positive, lasting memory, which wasn't really the way they normally behave. Now, as a leader, you know, you need to do something about that. So, you know, option one is you interrupt the meeting, you reprimand or redirect the person, and that doesn't work. Why? Well, you know, firstly, the person that you're redirecting becomes embarrassed, and everyone else in the room says, I wonder what meeting I'm going to get shot. So don't do that. The second thing is do nothing, and that means you're letting down the person, and you're not doing what you should do as a responsible leader or coach. So the third thing is enter a coaching moment. So when the meeting was over, I said to the person, and we'll call him Russell, hey, Russell, let's go outside and have a walk. So we walked outside of our building and I looked under a car in a trash can and behind a tree. And you can imagine the look on Russell's face by this time. And he said, what the hell are you doing? And I said, I'm looking for you. And he kind of looked back and I said, the you I know and love was not in that room today. What's on your mind? What's getting in your way? And we had a conversation. And, you know, the conversation kind of went, Russell had had a bad morning. You know, he kicked his toe on the bed, forgot to push the record button. You know, a lot of things happened to him that morning that had caused it not to be a great morning. And so we had a coaching conversation and you know, we were able to identify. And at the end of it, we had a hug and everything was fine. I noticed that person, when they went back into the building, they touched base with a couple in the meeting and you know, they said, are you okay? That's not normally who you are. He said, no, I'm sorry. You know, I just had a bad morning. So that whole experience is one where, you know, the leader, and it happened to be me at the time, exercised their responsibility as a coach, but did it in a way that was caring and sharing, and in no way did it embarrass the person. But the big plus about it was that we're able to use one of our values as the entry ramp into that conversation.
Our topic today is really getting into that leadership model and its influence, good or bad, on a culture. But before I get into any of that, I want to touch on, well, really the name of your consultancy, as well as what you sort of mentioned at the top. I'm kind of curious, could you define what a learning moment is? Because you didn't call it a coaching moment. You're calling it a learning moment. Why?
A learning moment is a positive or negative outcome of any situation that needs to be openly and freely shared to benefit all people in the organization. So why do we call it a learning moment? Many years ago, when I got the privilege to lead WD-40 Company, there was a word that hung around in most organizations, and it was called failure. And the only thing that failure did was create fear. And when people are in a state of fear, they're paralyzed. And I said, you know, we all know that we're going to have situations that, quote unquote, are failures. So, you know, what do we want to do from that? We want to learn. And Nelson Mandela said, education is the most powerful tool we have to change the world. So why wouldn't we take advantage of these opportunities where things failed to turn them into a time of or experience of learning? So I said, we're going to take the word failure out. We're going to replace it with learning moments. And if you have a positive learning moment, it's your responsibility to share it so others can amplify it. And if you have a negative learning moment, it's your responsibility to share it so we can help people not step in that pothole themselves. So it's the basis of, it's the catalyst of learning.
I have so many different ways I want to go with this, but I actually want to tap a bit into your experience at WD-40, especially considering you were there for so long and you had such a high employee engagement rate. So when you went, when you became CEO and you know, driver of the ship WD-40, what was the culture like when you first got there? Because, I mean, you've got some great numbers by the time you left, but did you start in such a great place?
The culture wasn't broken, but the culture wasn't one that was going to allow us to have the growth we wanted to have. And why do I say that? You know, when I joined WD-40 Company in 1987 in Australia, so 35 years. I moved to the United States in 1994 to head up our international expansion. At that time, WD-40 Company was really a US-based cultural company. And I said, if we're going to grow globally, we really need to have a culture that's empowering. It wasn't broken, but the culture we had was not going to allow us to build the way we wanted to build around the world. And interestingly enough, then in 1997, the CEO retired and I got the opportunity to lead as the CEO. And I looked around and I thought, how are we going to build this culture? And funnily enough, I was flying from Los Angeles to Sydney in a Qantas 747. I was in the little upper deck area and I was about 38,000 feet over the Pacific Ocean at dark 30, I don't know what time it was. And I had probably had the only light on in the cabin. I was doing some reading. And I came across a statement of the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama said, our purpose in life is to make people happy. If we can't make them happy, at least don't hurt them. I thought, well, that's an interesting statement. And then I actually read something of Aristotle's. And Aristotle said, pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. And my light went on in my head and I said, if we can create a culture where people actually go home happy and they like doing what they're doing, the work would be better. But I didn't know how to do that. So I sort of looked around even further when I got back, and I ended up finding a master's degree at the University of San Diego, which was a Master of Science in Executive Leadership. That's where I met my dear friend, Ken Blanchard, the one-minute manager who was my professor, who was really the guru of servant leadership. So I did a master's degree in leadership, and I learned all of the attributes of servant leadership, and I said, okay, I'm going to put them into play. So that was the kind of catalyst change. And subsequently, I sent 30 people through that master's degree from WD-40 company. So we went into a servant leadership organization, and we started to implement those practices. And our employee engagement, I started measuring employee engagement in the year 2000, and it was kind of in the mid, I don't know, 40s or 50s. And we started to grow the company, and then over a period of time, we got it to where it now is, which is 93.something%. And more importantly, Russell, 98% of the people say they love to tell people they work at the company.
Was there resistance? Because even in an organization that is not, you know, quote unquote, broken, it's still change. And people don't like change, Gary. So I'm curious how well it was adopted when you first started rolling it out.
Yeah, it was different, no doubt. And change is something different. So, yes, there was apprehension. I remember someone saying he's drunk too much of Ken Blanchard's Kool-Aid. You know, if we ignore him, he'll probably go away. Well, I wasn't going to go away because I believed in this. So it probably took us 3 to 5 years to start to gain momentum where people thought, you know, this was not just a passing phase. And this is where a lot of companies and organizations fall down. They think that they can bring in some consultant company and run a management program. They're going to sprinkle some fairy dust over the organization. It's going to change the culture, and bang, now we have a different culture. Doesn't work. I have an algorithm for culture, and I stole some of it from my friend Simon Sinek in his last book, which is The Infinite Game. And it's culture equals values plus behavior times consistency. And the word that he didn't have in there was consistency. Although he and I have always agreed that building a great culture is simple, not easy, and time is not your friend. So if you think about growing culture, you know, many years ago when I was a young lad in Australia, my science teacher gave me a Petri dish. And they said, we're going to grow some culture in this Petri dish. So what's important? The ingredients you put in the Petri dish. So in an organization, if you're growing culture, you've got to put in the right ingredients. You have to have a people-first mindset. You've got to have a clearly defined, authentic purpose. You've got to have a clear set of values. You've got to have a learning moment attitude and a number of other things. And then what's the role of the person who owns that Petri dish? You've got to watch that Petri dish every day. And you've got to reward and applaud the good ingredients so they grow, but then the bravery comes along. You've got to be brave enough to attack the toxins, because toxins will get in that Petri dish. And if you don't take them out real quickly, they're going to absolutely eat the good ingredients. So that's where the consistency comes along. That's where the leadership comes along. And, you know, I've said often, unfortunately, a lot of people protect their own comfort zone at the expense of other people's development, because it's not easy. It's simple, but not easy.
You have the benefit, I don't know if that's the right word, but the benefit of steering the ship for a couple decades. Not a lot of organizations have consistent leadership, and we're sticking to consistency. But when you start these programs and you're starting change, then the leadership sometimes will change, or they'll leave, and then it all falls apart. What advice would you give an organization that needs that consistency, but maybe doesn't have a CEO at the top of it for so long?
Well, I think, you know, that again, the CEO or the leader is there to mind the Petri dish. So the first thing you have to do is make sure that you're building that foundation. And, you know, the foundation is important, a foundation of care, a foundation of candor, a foundation of accountability, a foundation of responsibility. Now, you know, I you're right. I was the CEO for 25 years. Our new CEO that is now on the bridge, has been with the company for 31 years. So in one of the big, you know, attributes that I said was a must have for my successor is they have to understand that culture is a competitive advantage and the thing that holds the company together. And Steve understands that. So I think our job is to, you know, embed the culture in the organization. And that's what we wrote about in the book with Ken Blanchard is here's the infrastructure. Now make sure you take care of it. And I said those four pillars, care, candor, accountability, responsibility. Very simple. Care is your empathy eats your ego instead of your ego eating your empathy. That's the core of that. Candor is no lying, no faking, no hiding. I believe most people in organizations don't lie. They fake and hide. Why do they fake and hide? Because of fear. Accountability. This is where a lot of organizations fall down. What do you expect of me? And what do I expect of you? And how do we define it? And are we brave enough and comfortable enough to hold each other accountable? Very, 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 very important. And then responsibility. Are we going to be responsible for the ongoing development and nurturing of the culture in the organization?
When you say we are responsible, who are we talking about? Because you'll talk to executives sometimes and they'll be like, oh, it's the culture is the employees. Well, the employees are very much going, no, I'm looking for executive to be my culture stewards. Who holds the stick on this?
Everybody owns the culture. So you've got to make the culture engaging enough that those that within it protect it. I want everybody in the organization to protect it. Now, you know, interestingly enough, when we went through, you know, that experience of COVID, I was concerned that we maybe were draining cultural equity because we'd lost the opportunity to be together as often as we were before. Even though we were before COVID, a very hybrid company. You know, we have offices in 17 countries around the world. We sell the blue and yellow can with a little red top in 176 countries. You know, the sun never sets on WD-40 because we're in every time zone. But we just completed our employee opinion survey in March 2020, and the numbers that came back were just as strong as ever. But we get to January 2021, and you know, we're doing everything we think we can to maintain the culture. And I said, we need to go and check in and just see what's going on. So we did. We went out and we did a check-in survey. And one of the numbers that came back, and let's just reflect what was happening in January 2021. COVID, still uncertain. Promises of vaccine, none yet. We're all still, you know, are we going to live? Is this the end of the world? Our company was doing well because of, you know, the way we were structured. But I asked the survey again, and one question came back. And the question that came back was, I am excited about my place in the company's future. And 98% of our people worldwide said they were excited about their place in the company's future. And I went, what? What the hell? How can they do that? What's the answer to that? So we dug in to see why that number had gone up to 98%. And basically, here was the answer. I feel safe. If I need to be anywhere right now, I want to be here. Because we are living our promise to each other, which is a group of people that come together to protect and feed each other. So while everyone around them was feeling unsafe, we were feeling safe. And I thought, wow, there's the power of culture. Everybody was protecting each other.
It's interesting you bring up the pandemic, because I think the pandemic was such a litmus test for a lot of leaders as well. Because with such a monumental change and with employees realizing what they want and need from an employee experience, leaders either stepped up or we saw their true colors about this. So what do you think is some of the biggest struggles for leaders today? Because change is happening so fast now.
Well, COVID slapped a lot of leaders up the side of the head. That's what happened. You know, I wrote an article on LinkedIn called The Great Escape. There was a lot of talk about the Great Resignation. It wasn't the Great Resignation. It was the Great Escape. People were either escaping from your culture or to your culture. And I think what COVID did, it had leaders, you know, wake up to the fact that people are the absolute core strength of our business. And if we're not going to help them be their best person, they're going to leave us. You know, what happened before COVID? You know, the numbers have been absolutely horrible for life. You know, you look at Aristotle. Aristotle in 384 BC said, pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. And now here we are in the year 2023, and we still haven't worked out that our main responsibility as a leader is to put pleasure in the job. You know, imagine a place where you go to work every day. You make a contribution to something bigger than yourself. You learn something new. You're protected and set free by a compelling set of values, and you go home happy. Happy people create happy families. Happy families create happy communities. Happy communities create a happy world, and we need a happy world. So business has the biggest responsibility ever to do that. And unfortunately, leaders didn't get it. You know, I created someone called Al, the soul-sucking CEO. Now, you know, people who are listening to us can't see, but he's the soul-sucking CEO of Fear Incorporated. Now, it could be Alice as well. And let me here's some of the attributes of this undesirable leader. His ego eats his empathy instead of his empathy eating his ego. He thinks micromanagement is essential. Al or Alice is now corporate royalty. They've spent their life climbing this corporate ladder, kicking ass and kissing ass all along the way. And now that they're on the throne of leadership, they shall be bowed down to and respected. They probably have the largest office in the building. They probably have a private parking spot. You may never find them in the cafeteria or cantina sharing and being with their team because someone's delivered coffee to their office. Al or Alice loves a fear-based culture. They're the master of control, and they know it all. They know all everything. They have all the answers, even all the wrong ones. They think learning is for losers. They must always be right. They hate feedback, and they don't regularly follow through on their commitments. That's the behaviors of the soul-sucking CEO.
So that unintentionally and intentionally, that soul-sucking CEO is killing their organization, slowly poisoning it. And I know people around them want to do better. So looking at, you've got this amazing triangle where you talk about the priorities of championship of hope, of being tough but tender, of having EQ. But to get an Al or an Alice to adopt that triangle, that way of thinking, what is the tipping point for them? Or do we just get rid of them?
Well, you know, I think there's an awareness. You know, again, I think, as I said, COVID was some sort of a tipping point. It slapped them up the side of the head. And one of the great things that's happening now is there's a lot of public voice around culture within organizations. So I think we're realizing that it is all about the people. So I think, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing now, Russell, is, you know, I've just completed my 25-year apprenticeship in leadership. And now what I'm doing is going out and sharing with people. And I'm just in the process of finalizing my new book. And you may like the title. It's called Any Dumbass Can Do It.
Love it. Love it.
And I call it that is because, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. You know, I think we created this culture because we looked at what were the key elements that we have to focus on, and we did it day after day. So, you know, I think, and again, if I go back to my equation, if you had this strategic plan and it was 50% right, and 80% of your people went to work every day, passionate about your executing on the purpose, loving the fact that they're learning every day, feeling protected and set free by a compelling set of values, 80 times 50 is 4,000. If only 20% of your people go to work every day, 20 times 50 is what? 1,000. So it's very clear. But unfortunately, it's owl-like behavior, short-sightedness, greed, short-term thinking. You know, give me the result tomorrow. We're not going to play the infinite game. We're going to play the finite game every day. It's those sort of things that don't allow you to build enduring companies over time. Now, okay, let's think about our 93% employee engagement. That's okay. But did the company perform? Absolutely. You know, we nearly 6x'd revenue, and we were a public company, still are, on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. And we were able to grow our market cap over that period of time from about $300 million to close to $3 billion. So if you would have bought $100 worth of shares on October 7, 1997, on the day I retired, those shares would have been worth $1,780. Now, that's not because of me. It's because of the culture that we built over time. The culture wasn't me. I planted the seed, but the tree grew. And now the tree is there, and people are sitting under the shade of the tree and continuing to, you know, continuing to build that tree over time. So that's what's important.
How did you keep leaders engaged for so long? Because, I mean, leaders need leaders. And I don't think that's emphasized enough. I hear a lot where it's just leaders need to do this and leaders need to do that. I'm like, you're right, but they also need leadership. So how does someone in your position keep that? We did talk about consistency, and we've talked a bit about professional development. I found really interesting as well as a way to keep them engaged. What are some ways that people can, or leadership can keep their leaders engaged?
Well, we can have a lot of fun. You know, one of our tribal, you know, we call ourselves a tribe, not a team, because one of the biggest desires we have as human beings is to belong. And so belonging is very important. But the number one responsibility of a tribal leader is to be a learner and a teacher. And as you said further, so how do we keep engaged? We have meaningful work. You know, people really want to know two things. Do I matter and do I belong? That's what they want to know in the organization. So as a leader, it's your job to show them how they matter, to help them see how they continue to make a difference. So learning and teaching is so important. This feeling of belonging. And then, you know, we've got to celebrate what we do because it's got to be fun. Now, life's a gift. Don't send it back unwrapped. We've got to do a lot of unwrapping. So, so again, and you know, achievement is great. Challenge is great. So it's all of those things. It's what you would are, you know, leaders listening to us today, just write a little chapter about what would be the greatest party you would ever go to and why would you enjoy it? And then think about how you translate into what would be the greatest company you could go to work to every day. What would make you want to do this? You're leaving your home in the morning. You're about to walk out the door. And Russell gives his husband, wife, or significant other a big high five and says, I am so excited to be with my people today because... fill in the blank. What is your fill in the blank? If it's, you know, I hate going to work today. Yeah, well, one of the things I think is really funny is what reaction do you have when someone in your organization books a meeting in your team's calendar? Is it, oh no, holy crap, I got to put up with that person? Or is it, yay, I can't wait to be with Russell today because... fill in the blank. I know that I'm going to learn something. I'm going to be involved in something that's really challenging. I'm going to feel great. You know, which reaction do you have?
Well, everybody loves when I put out meetings. Absolutely, Gary. That happens all the time, I'm sure. So you talk about belonging. Love that. But belonging nowadays generally always gets associated with diversity, inclusivity, equality. How do you tackle... well, the different personalities, the introverts, the extroverts, the personalization, how does diversity get understood within an organization that's talking about purpose and professional development? Because what success and motivation is to individuals is different across the board.
You respect it. That's, you know, that's really what it comes down to. You know, people want acceptance. They want connectedness. They want security, support, inclusion, identity. So respect it. We're not all the same, thank goodness. Why? What if we're all like me or you? Well, how boring. You know, one of the great things about our company is operating in, you know, all of the cultures we do around the world, we actually, a long time ago, saw the value in diversity, in diverse points of view and opinions. Now, the great thing about our company is we have all that, but our core values bond us together in the organization. So that's really the glue in our organization was the values that are the same in every country around the world.
You've been around a while. You've consulted with a lot of organizations. What do you feel a lot of them are getting wrong right now to lean into learning moments?
They're scared. You know, right now, you know, we're going through this period of uncertainty. And a dear friend of mine, Dr. Rebecca Homkes, has a wonderful definition, which is a series of future events that may or may not occur. And right now we're going through this series of future events, And there are so many of them, and we can't work out the ones that may or may not occur. So I think there's a lot of, you know, scarcity around there. But really, it gets back to the point that to survive and grow, we need each other. And if we create an environment where we actually can trust each other, depend on each other, and get support from each other, the chances of us excelling are a lot greater than if we don't have that.
We talk a lot about inspiring other leaders, but what or inspiring employees and the employee experience to perpetuate culture. But I'll pick on you, Gary. What inspires your leadership? Because you're probably not in the best of moods every day. You're not probably you're a human being. So what's inspiring your ability to move forward over your years of leadership?
Well, it comes from the statement that I may have shared from the Dalai Lama, which is our purpose in life is to make people happy. If we can't make them happy, at least don't hurt them. And Russell, you're exactly right. You know, I have to remind myself, and interesting you should ask, on my computer screen here and on my little notebook that I carry around with me all the time, I have a little list here. And this little list says, am I being the person I want to be right now? And then it says, who is that person? Now, I have a list of who I want to be because when I'm the person that I want to be, I'm the best person to myself and those around me. And this list says, I want to be grateful. I want to be caring. I want to be empathetic. I want to be reasonable. I want to be a listener. I want to be fact-based. I want to have a balanced opinion. I want to be curious. I want to be a learner. And I want to throw sunshine, not a shadow. Now, you would think a guy who's 66 years old, who's been in a leadership position for 25 years, would not need this stupid little list that he looks at I don't know how many times a day. But you know why I need it, Russell? Here's why. It's because we are just these basic human beings bumbling our way down this pathway of life. And as we're bumbling down this pathway of life, there's these thieves, as I call them, in the bushes. And these thieves run out of the bushes and they grab us and they take us in the bush. And it could be the thief of not being grateful or the thief of not caring or the thief of ego or the thief of not being a listener or a thief of any one of those. And when we're in that bush for a minute, we might feel okay. Oh, this seems okay. I might stay here for a while, but it's not. So we have to keep reminding ourselves and testing ourselves against who do we want to be. And, you know, this little list has been so beneficial to me because I have to center myself. You know, I get in situations where I've said that leadership is a balance between being tough-minded and tender-hearted. I can go to either end of that scale real easily. I can be so tough-minded and I can be so tender-hearted. And I have to remind myself, I want to be in the middle. The genius is in the and, in the middle. So you've got to center yourself. How do you be the best you can be? And don't be embarrassed about having to remind yourself of doing that, because we're these basic human beings bumbling our way down this pathway of life.
Out of curiosity, how often do you look at that list, Gary?
Well, it's on my notebook. So
every
I'm
day.
Looking more, and it's on my computer screen right here in the same way in a little sticker. So I'm looking at it, you know, I don't know how many times a day, many, many times a day it reminds me. And I also, if ever I'm kind of going into something that is super, super important to me, I take a moment to center myself. I go, okay, I need to read this. This is who I want to be. Okay, am I good? Okay, I'm good.
I love that we started this conversation with you highlighting situational awareness when you were talking about someone you noticed was not being themselves, but you have to know them to know that they're being different than their normality. And ended it with the importance of self-awareness, which I can't tell you how much I believe those are the two strongest superpowers any leader can have in an organization. Thank you very much, Gary. I have the final question I have to ask, which is, what's one simple action people can do right now to improve their relationships at work?
Ask someone, what's on your mind? Be grateful. Be there.
Love that. That is Gary Ridge. He was, for 25 years, the CEO and chairman of WD-40. He now runs his own consultancy for culture coaching called The Learning Moment. Thanks so much for being here, Gary.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That is it. That is all. That is another episode of Relationships at Work, the Leadership Mindset Guide for Creating a Workplace We Love. I'm so glad you got to spend the time with me and with Gary and learning about learning moments and how it can really enhance and improve our leadership skills and understanding. One thing I want to ask, though, is if you have time, now that you've just listened to the recent episode and hopefully you've enjoyed other episodes, if you could take a moment on Spotify or Apple, both the podcast apps have this, a ratings and review section. You just have to scroll down and leave 5-star review, maybe a couple of tidbits about what you've taken away, what you've learned, how you found the show valuable. Couldn't appreciate it more. It really helps the show grow. Anyway, thank you very much for your time. Take care.